Welcome to another episode of Beyond Sermons, where we see Jesus Christ beyond the pulpit. Joining us today will be Tom Kotowski. This will be part two of Possessing Science and Faith. Let's drop in on the conversation.
Okay, so you mentioned that the Hubble scope or telescope, when it looks further and further out towards the universe, things are moving at a faster pace, which if we were to somehow rewind that, sort of points to a single point of, I guess, contact or perhaps a single point of creation. I've heard other philosophers, even Christian philosophers, make reference and say stuff that everything that had a beginning had a cause. And I think there's references to Guth and Vilenkin. There's a paper that basically talks about how the ever-expanding universe, if you basically play it in rewind, has a point of creation, and that cause of that creation is God. What are your thoughts about that idea, or even the authors of those papers?
Well, one of the things that contemporary materialists have to do is they have to come up with some sort of explanation of that moment of, if you want to call it creation, the moment in which the universe came into being. Now, they would not attach a supernatural, a transcendent God as the creator of the material universe. So they have to come up with some sort of physical principles to explain this. And you were referencing Guth, and his great contribution to astrophysics is that you need an explanation for the fact that if you take a look at the black body radiation that's in space, it has incredible uniformity to parts per million anywhere you look in space. And now, if you try to put this backwards in time, even at the velocity of light, there wouldn't be enough time for one end of the universe to be in equilibrium with the other. They would, on the basis of random chance, they should be at different temperatures.
Okay. But
because they all have the same uniform temperature with an extraordinary degree, millionths of a degree, because of that situation, physicists felt they needed to get some explanation for that. And one of the explanations was the idea that you had this period of rapid expansion.
Right.
And that would allow then, because it's so very, very rapid, to allow everything to remain in communication, because it started off at a certain point and then it expanded, if you will, to a present size. So that would be one way of being able to explain the uniformity. If at one time everything was the same and then it expanded exponentially, hugely, by, I forget the number of orders of magnitude, 10 to the 30 order of magnitude.
Right.
That would be explanation of the uniformity.
Right.
And people accepted that because it is an answer. It is a mechanism.
Right.
But there are big problems with that if one looks at it critically. And there's some mathematics that is used to justify how this could happen. There's a curve that we assume that the universe went along that curve. But one of the problems with this is, one, how does it know when to stop? If it's expanding, what is the mechanism that causes it to stop? And how could it stop with the accuracy that it did? And also, how could it stop everywhere in space at the same time? Because if it didn't stop everywhere in space, and it's increasing at this incredible rate, you would have huge differences between one part of space and the other, because this exponential growth, everything has to stop at the same time, because it's moving so quickly. If it doesn't stop instantly at the same time throughout the whole universe, then there's a huge difference in between the different parts of the universe. But anyway,
so quick question. When you talk about the stoppage of the universe, what in particular are you talking about? Stoppage of what?
The rate
of what? Growth?
Yes. You have this Guth hypothesized this huge period of inflation. And so it's moving, it's increasing incredibly quickly, the rate is. But the question is, if it's increasing at this tremendous rate, how could that expansion or inflation stop at an incredible accuracy with respect to time? Because things are inflating so rapidly, in order to be able to get the universe that it wasn't flying apart all over, things would have to stop instantly throughout the whole universe. And that's not explained. Mm-hmm. It's not explained how that could happen. And so that is one of the objections and one of the things that people, when you really look at things, and if you're not just looking at something to be able to explain away the need for a creator, you'll be happy with that. Atheists will be happy with that. That's a way of explaining how you got this tremendous uniformity in the background, infrared background. And that's the answer. You don't need a God. So that's what they want. They grasp onto that explanation.
Gotcha.
And
I mean, and now, if I could just jump in there real quick, I mean, is there, I mean, you have a number of different classes of physics. You have like physics from the before the 17th century, after the 17th century. You have contemporary, more modern physics. Isn't it just futile?
Is it futile?
Yeah, isn't all of the physics and the science, isn't it just futile?
Well, there's two aspects to that. One is the early scientists, the ones before the 17th century, as I said, they saw the universe as an example of general revelation, and they felt by understanding the universe, they could understand something about God, about his nature.
Gotcha.
These are his laws.
Right.
And his, if you know his laws, that will tell you something about the lawgiver.
Yeah. Thank you very much for bringing that back up again. Yeah, I did forget that point. So, but then there's a switch from like pre-17th century to now 17th century and beyond.
Yes.
And I think the catalyst right there is the rejection of God when it comes to scientific motivation, right?
Well, there's a number of factors there. And that is, in earlier times, there was this division between the earth and the heavens. The heavens were this great celestial sphere out there. They're outside a knowledge of man. They're outside his earth. They're outside of his universe. And they were ethereal. They were ethereal, those things that were not in contact with man. But then what happened is with Newton's law of gravity, the law of gravity holds on the earth, and by his reasoning, it's universal. And so it is the mechanism that holds the planets around the sun and the moon going around the earth. So at that point, then the heavens were brought down to earth. There was no longer this ethereal nature about them. They were then just like the earth. There was nothing special about them than there was just about dirt itself or the earth itself. Or if you drop an apple, that the same law of gravitation that causes the apple to come down is the same law that holds all the planets in their paths. So that was the one thing. Heaven no longer had this heavenly ethereal quality. It was more earth-like and materialistic.
Okay, so one quick question. That's interesting that you talked about how like the heavens were brought down to the earth, and you know, the nature, the natural and the supernatural, were more tightly coupled. in 17th century science, I would say. So if you have like heavens that are coming down, do you have like souls that are going to heaven? You know, just like how Jesus, how he ascended, what is it, 40 days after his resurrection? What I'm doing is really just trying to see if I can somehow look at 17th century science and be able to maybe perhaps draw some more clues and deeper understanding of, say, the life of life, death, resurrection of Jesus Christ in particular. I'm just curious from that unique perspective at this point.
Well, there are a number of points of view to that. And my point of view is that God is spirit. And that you cannot, and for one thing, you know, we are told that there is going to be a new earth, and probably the new earth is going to be some new laws of physics. So to try to use today's understanding of God, you're at a loss to begin with, because the laws of nature are going to be changed when the new heaven comes down.
Right.
So we're going to have I'm assuming we're going to have an entirely different laws of physics when that happens. Gotcha. So once again, going through this, God is spirit. And now I believe that there are things in looking at nature, there is evidence of his hand in the work of nature. Right. But I don't think you can use nature to explain God. What we have is simply the work of his hand. It is not him himself. It is just as something that he created, just like we would create a pot. And to say that the pot explains our mind, our soul, our emotions, that's just like the same sort of argument as saying, well, we know what this created thing over here, so we'd have to know something about the holiness of God, or the fact that he has an infinite nature, that everything that he says has to become so. So I don't think that's a good analogy, or there's some big problems with that level of thinking.
Gotcha. So we jumped from pre-17th to post-17th. You know, science, if we were to get back into like modern physics and some of the contemporary views of nature of the universe, are they still trying to explain away God? Or do you think there is a pathway to intelligent design, which to me almost seems futile, because how can you create scientific methods and principles to measure God?
Well, there are a couple things there. One, being brilliant is no guarantee that you're going to know the truth, or being brilliant is no guarantee that you that you're going to accept the truth. If you have decided that there is no God, therefore you do not have to control your behavior, you do not have to control your wants, your desires, your excesses, and so forth, that you are freed from that. And that is, the atheist has taken a great deal of comfort in the thought that because the universe is not created, and because we understand the laws of the universe, we have no need of God. And the atheist takes great comfort in believing that. Now, if we're talking, this is very, very interesting, because mentioned before that with 17th century science, they thought that that the universe was infinite, you had no need of a God, that we understood everything that there was about the universe, you had no need of a God because it was all material. Then we found out that there's evidence for creation ex nihilo, out of nothing, there was creation. And so the arguments that were used before, those arguments no longer hold. But but once again, contemporary science did not correct it. But to get back to what you were asking about in terms of the relationship between contemporary science and the nature of God. Well, one, we know the universe is created. Two, and this is very interesting, it started in the 1900s, is the start of quantum mechanics. And 1903, the special theory of relativity than the general theory of relativity. And so we got to the point where we started to think more and more and more and more that we are having an understanding of the fundamentals of substance and the laws that held them together. And then what happened is, as the 19th century kept developing, it turns that we found out that there's areas in which we have a complete lack of understanding. And
one well, such those, as what? Sorry to interrupt. A lack of understanding in what particular areas would you say?
Well, one of the huge things right now is we know that only 5% of the known matter of which we consist is ordinary matter. Something in the order of 95% is not ordinary matter. Have no idea what it is. Now, okay. There are some thoughts as to what dark energy is with regard to a property of space. But once again, that is simply a hypothesis.
I mean, are we getting into antimatter territory here?
Antimatter is something that we know exists.
Okay.
For example.
Well, we know if it exists, but does it fall into the 95% of uncharacterized phenomenons?
No. Okay. No, that is still the kind of matter of which we are created. That's still the kind of matter that is explained by our current laws. It's explained by the standard model of quantum mechanics. All that is, you know, that fits within our realm of understanding and our theories, and is consistent with so many things. Dark matter, have no idea what it is. There are hypotheses. There are hypotheses that people try to prove, and then when they try to look for the things that they would have expected would be consistent with that, they couldn't find it.
I find it interesting that they call it dark energy. You know, it sounds so antichrist or
I understand,
or devilish.
But it's in this sense, you have the stars that you can see,
yeah,
and they are lights, and they are the astronomical bodies that we can see, and then there's the stuff we can't see. And so it's called dark, simply because you cannot see it. It does not have electromagnetic nature to it that causes light to exist. Light is electromagnetic. Well, there are a number of different ways of looking at it. Going back to classical physics, it is electromagnetic. It's the same thing that you have in radio waves. It's the same thing as light itself. It's the same thing that you have radiating from the human body in terms of infrared radiation that you can't see. So dark matter does not radiate. It does not radiate. You can't see it. You can't see it with a telescope, with the human eye. You can't see it with an infrared microscope. You can't see it even with the huge radio Jordel banks and things of this sort, where they have the huge antennas to try to look for radio waves, be able to look at different areas of the spectrum.
But yet scientists still know it's there, though.
We have all the indications that it's there, because that is the only thing that can explain some of the known phenomena. There are things out there that you need to have some huge gravity out there to be able to keep, for example, the galaxies, the spiral galaxies, from flying apart. There has to be some dark matter there, because if you go ahead and you use science to predict, there's a relationship between the radius something is from the center and the velocity that has to go around it. And it's based on the amount of matter that you have there that can hold in the stars going around it without them not having enough of a gravitational pull. Okay. And so you have to have a huge gravitational pull to keep the stars going around in these spiral galaxies and not fly apart.
So, I mean, it sounds like it takes a certain amount of faith, though, to believe in dark energy. You can't see it, you can't measure it, you can't really observe it, but you can see the effects, kind of like God. Not everybody can see God, but you can feel God, I guess, but you also can see the impact of God. You can maybe see some of the evidence of God. Doesn't it sound like you have some scientists who are exercising faith here when it comes to studying dark energy?
Well, to believe anything, you have to have faith. If you don't believe in science, if you don't have faith in it, then you can't do it because you don't believe that it's true.
Okay, so that's interesting there. Where do you draw the line between having a faith in science and then having a faith in God?
Well, there are many different aspects to that. One is I do not see any disconnect between the universe that exists and the creator. I do not see any disconnect there.
Okay, all right.
And the other, so that is, in a certain sense, that's the wisdom of knowing something about the earth. But then there's the other or aspect to that, and that is the spiritual.
Yeah.
For me personally, I know the holiness of God. Now, that may not make any sense to somebody because you can experience God on a number of different levels. And for one, we are, as I said before, we are created in the image and likeness of God. So we have some understanding. There's part of us that is in his image. We have some understanding of that. For me personally, it's this, it's the understanding that he is holy, well, thrice holy, 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 holy. And there is within me up, and there's probably an element of faith there, but it's something that I just know intrinsically within my soul.
Yeah.
And there are many other aspects to being a Christian that are like that. There are things that tell us about the nature of Christianity and the goodness, well, the goodness of Christianity and once again, the fact that the concept of truth is so central to Christianity. If the word truth is 150 times through there, talks about have to worship God in spirit and truth.
Right.
Jesus, once again, when he preached, he would always say, "Verily, verily, I say," which is to say, "This is truth, this is truth, this is
Yeah.
truth."
Yeah.
And the Bible invites you to go ahead and study it and to prove that it is true. And of course, there are all sorts of books you have on apologetics, and I've read many of the books on apologetics. And
Yeah.
Josh McDowell, I think he has some really good three different books: Evidence Demands a Verdict, More Evidence Demands a Verdict. There's even a third one, I believe.
Just to get back at one quick point, as science have matured and physics mature, do you feel like there's a divergence from God as we
No,
become more and more modern, as
no,
we get into like quantum
no,
physics
no.
and so forth, once we start to really mature in those areas as a society? Are we using, is science diverting from God?
Well, once again, atheists or people who want to live their own lives and do not want to admit that there's a God, that we have to obey his laws. Those people use science as an excuse for dismissing God or saying that there is no God. And so they're using it in for that extent. And there was this point in which we understood everything about the universe. Now we know there's things called dark matter, dark energy, have clueless, no idea as to what that is. And then there's this other aspect which I hadn't mentioned. And that is in the beginning of the 19th century, people discovered that there were things as electrons. Then they discovered neutrons and they found out that there's atoms. And then they found out that the atoms are being are described by quantum mechanics. And you developed the the mathematics, the understanding of quantum mechanics. And then you got that down. And then he found out there are things called quarks and gluons, which are even more fundamental level. And you completed it in a certain sense with this discovery of the Higgs field.
Yeah, now, the Higgs boson, the God particle. I remember hearing about that hype.
But if you take all those things and you take all that knowledge and you keep going to more basic, more fundamental, more fundamental. For the last 30, well, it's longer than that, the understanding of quantum mechanics is now field theory. Mm-hmm. In field theory, there are no particles. Something like an electron in field theory exists like a wave. Just like you have water and you can have ripples in the wave and that ripple can go and it can cause a buoy to go up and down or affect something at some distance.
Right.
That is the theory because we know that light, or for that matter, causality is limited by the velocity of light. There are many reasons for that in the physics that won't go into all of them. But and one of the reasons we think that is because if you have enough energy, suddenly matter can appear. If you have something in your order of 1 mega electron volt, you can create an electron hole pair, electron and anti-electron. They appear out of nowhere. So how can a material body appear out of nowhere? Well, one explanation is that it is a field, that it exists as a wave, and what you're seeing is this ripple in space-time, or this ripple in the electron field, and that ripple can move about, that ripple can have other influences. It's a field.
Yeah, but the thing is, I'm still trying to understand, though, even if we do know that a field is there, how can we then somehow deduce that something comes from nothing when there's an underlying field that we haven't mastered knowledge-wise?
Well, let me continue with that because there was a point that I was trying to get to, and this is the point.
Okay.
And let me address this another way. You take a look at the universe, the huge part of the universe is empty. Yes, you have little clusters of stars, but there's nothing there. You take a look at an atom, and the nucleus within the atom is one of the analogies that you have a soccer stadium or a stadium, and you have a baseball or a basketball in the middle of it. That is the size of the nucleus relative to the size of the atom. But then you go into the nucleus and you discover that there's protons and neutrons in it. Then you find out that a proton is composed of other things, 2 up quarks and 1 down quark. And they are then joined by the forces between them. And then you find out that there's matter, yes, but we know from Einstein that energy is equal to mc squared. If you have energy, it appears to be matter. And in the atom, most of the energy is due to the motion, the kinetic energy of the quarks going around there. And it's not mass, it's matter. At the very, 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 very heart of things, you do not have any matter. There's some small part of it, a couple percent, that interacts with the Higgs field. But most of that is really energy.
Gotcha.
So now if you have everything as a field, what do you have? The only thing you have really are the laws of interactions. That's all you're left. You don't have stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. The only thing you have is this thing you call a field, which is really just a concept. It is just a mathematical concept. And at the very, very basics of things, the only thing you have are the interactions between the two. Those are the things you can measure. You measure forces, you measure interactions. We only have measurement that understand these things. But this is where I'm getting to in all this. If that's all you have is interactions, the only thing you have are laws. There's no matter. You only have laws. Those are the laws that God created. So the only thing we have are His laws. Our body Only a very small fraction of it, I don't know, a billionth of a percent, probably even smaller than that, is matter, is electrons.
Okay.
And one of the great mysteries is, because we're mostly empty space, what prevents us from going through a wall? And the answer there is, just about all the forces that we experience other than gravity are electrostatic.
Okay.
You try to put your hand, put it through a wall, and the electrons in your hand are being repelled by the electrons in the wall.
Yeah.
So what we think of as force is electrostatic.
Right.
It's electrons in the wall pushing against the electrons in our hand.
So
what we feel is a force. We push on the wall, we're feeling a force. It is not material. All the things we think are material aren't there.
Got you.
What are fields? Fields are laws. They're the laws of the interaction. God made those laws. The only thing that exists are God's laws.
All right.
In him, we move, we breathe, we have our being. He creates us moment to moment.
Amen to that. Now, the thing is, I have a quick question. This is going to be slightly controversial. Hope it's not too controversial. But if God created these laws and he spoke these laws, can he break these laws as well, too?
God's a lawgiver.
Now, can he be a lawbreaker, perhaps? Because in the book of John, when Jesus appeared to his disciples in that house or whatever, he just seemed to have walked through the walls or walked through the doors. And this is, I guess he was in a glorified body, or this is before he ascended to his father. You know what I mean? So in that situation, you have Jesus who apparently walked through a door. Not only did he walk on water, you know, and do all sorts of miracles and so forth, but post resurrection, he walked through a door, or he just suddenly appeared to his disciples in a home or a house.
Well, I don't claim to have an understanding of how God would choose to do things.
Right.
But I can, of course, make some hypotheses. One, when Jesus ascended, his body was left behind for a while anyways, and his spirit ascended. So God is spirit, and a spirit has no difficulty going through a wall. And as we said before, what is a wall? It is mostly empty space. The vast majority of what we think is material. Once again, at the bottom basis is a wave. And the only thing that it is are the interactions. And those interactions are laws. God made those laws.
What a way to end another episode of Beyond Sermons, where we seek Jesus Christ beyond the pulpit. If this episode blessed you, go to beyondsermons.com. where you can subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice. God bless, be blessed, and be a blessing.